You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, especially binge eating disorder, and I am here to help you break free from binging, guilt, body shame, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to call in with questions, the number here is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, because the solution to binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the solution is not yet another diet. It is not willpower. It is not control. The key to change is to focus on what's eating at you and what is weighing on you, on why you're eating instead of what you're eating. So give me a call and let's figure out a way to banish binging for good. If you are on Instagram, because I'm also live streaming on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment or a question and I will address it. Okay, so the topic today is emotional eating. We've all heard the term emotional eating, and we think we know what emotional eating is, but are we right? This is the question. So let me give you a few scenarios. Cammie broke up with her boyfriend and she immediately dove into a pint of chocolate ice cream. She polished it off and ordered more from Postmates. Lucinda barely eats anything during the day because she is so busy. As soon as she gets home from work, she starts snacking and just can't seem to stop, and inevitably it turns into a binge. Jessica always looks forward to having wine, cheese, and crackers after work as a way of managing stress. She often eats to the point of discomfort, and she goes to sleep in miserable pain. Now, two of these women are emotional eaters, and one is not. Can you guess which one? Anybody? Anybody on Instagram? Can you guess which one? Is it Cammie, who broke up with her boyfriend and dove into a pint of ice cream? Is it Lucinda, who barely eats anything all day and just binges when she gets home? Or is it Jessica, who eats until she is in pain, in actual physical pain? The answer is Lucinda. Lucinda is not eating emotionally. She is binging out of deprivation and hunger. She doesn't eat enough during the day, and she gets so ravenous that it takes a while to feel full. So Cammie and Lucinda are using food to resolve something psychological, which is the basis of what we often call emotional eating. So what is emotional eating anyway? The heck is it? Okay, so emotional eating basically means eating to change the way we feel emotionally. Cammie was eating ice cream because she was really upset about the breakup. Jessica ate cheese and crackers as a way of resolving stress. So these are both examples of emotional eating. When we don't eat enough during the day, yeah, we're going to end up eating too much, maybe binging, but that is out of deprivation. That doesn't have to do with our emotions. And can it be both? Yes, it can, just to complicate matters, but let's keep it simple. So when we turn to food for comfort or to manage some kind of internal conflict, some kind of stress, something going on in our lives, when we avoid our feelings, and we use food to just comfort ourselves, that's emotional eating. And it is okay, actually, to rely on food every once in a while, to eat something every once in a while when you're upset. I mean, we're only human, but eating something is not the same as binging. When it becomes more frequent, when that is the only way that you are coping, or when it reaches a point where it's uncontrollable, then it's a problem. A question I get a lot is emotional eating an eating disorder? Is it an actual eating disorder? Well, some kinds of emotional eating involve, eating disorders. Some kinds of like binge eating involves emotional eating. Bulimia involves emotional eating, but it is not an eating disorder on its own. You wouldn't say, I have an emotional eating disorder. Eating disorders are very complex psychological conditions that develop as a result of a number of factors, including our temperament, just the way we're born, our environment, how the world influences us, and our culture, which is part of our environment, I guess. So let's just understand the most common forms of emotional eating. So binge eating disorder. And by the way, binge eating is different from binge eating disorder. Binge eating happens when we feel an uncontrollable urge to eat, even when we're not hungry. And we just can't stop ourselves. Sometimes we eat so fast, it's without tasting or enjoying the food, often to the point where you are beyond full, you are physically uncomfortable, and you don't even taste it, you don't even like it. Sometimes people eat things they don't even want to eat, like dry oatmeal or things like that. Like binge eating is this uncontrollable, feels like an addiction, but it's not, kind of a feeling. And it is followed by intense shame and guilt. And we just feel so cringy about our behavior, right? And we imagine what people would think if they knew the truth about what was going on with food. And self-esteem suffers because of it. Bulimia is binge eating disorder, binging, followed by some kind of purging, some kind of getting rid of that food. And people who struggle with bulimia, they may throw up. They may exercise compulsively, sort of negate everything that they just ate, or they may restrict themselves from food in the following days after the binge. So on the surface, bulimia is, pardon the expression, but it's kind of like having one's cake and eating it too. You have it, but it doesn't count because you get rid of it. Easy peasy, except it's not. It's not that at all. Bulimia is a highly symbolic behavior. It can express conflict about wanting or needing relationships, wanting or needing people, wanting or needing other things in our lives. We take in food and then get rid of it. Well, that can feel empowering. And if you don't have a sense of power in other areas of your life, it is, you're gonna take your power where you can find it. Several of my patients have had what I call financial bulimia. In fact, I wrote my doctoral dissertation about someone who had financial bulimia. And what this is going on shopping binges and buying a ton of stuff and then returning everything. So again, it's so symbolic, and understanding each person's individual reasons for the behavior is important, as with all forms of disordered eating. You really want to be curious, not critical. When we're critical, we tell ourselves, I can't believe you did that, or I can't believe I did that. Oh, disgusting, horrible, I won't do it again. You feel terrible and you beat yourself up, and then you may just turn to food to escape your own mean voice. When you're curious, why did I do that? What was going on with me? What's happening right now? What's going on with me? Why? What would I be thinking about if I were not going to food? What would I be feeling if I were not eating? What would be on my mind? What would I be conflicted about? What would I be worried about? How is this distracting me from parts of my life? These are questions to ask yourself. And when you ask yourself questions, guess what? Our minds want to come up with answers. When you ask yourself a question, your mind wants to give you the answer. So be curious and not critical, and you'll start discovering the why that you're turning to food. Then anorexia, which is characterized by an obsession with losing weight. And people with anorexia, they starve themselves often into just emaciation, looking like, you know, concentration camp victims, but they can't see that they become too thin. Now, here's what's really, really important is that not everyone with anorexia looks like they just came out of the Holocaust. You could be, you know, at a lower weight, but not skinny, 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 like scary skinny. You can be scary skinny, but you don't have to be scary skinny to have anorexia. You cannot tell when someone has an eating disorder by looking at them. You can't look at someone and say, that person's anorexic, that person's a binge eater. You just can't, because people who binge eat are also all different sizes. You could be thin and be a binge eater. You could be normal weight and be and binge eat, or you could be on the heavier side and binge eat. So just remember, if you can't tell from appearance what someone is going through. So anorexia is often misunderstood about as, you know, it's about being, it's about vanity. People think, oh, it's about appearance. And for some people, going on a diet can morph into anorexia, but dieting does not always lead to anorexia. It is much more complicated than that. And, you know, psychologically, anorexia is associated with denying needs, denying basic needs, and other things. People think it's all about control. For some people it is, for some people it isn't. Lots of times people have asked me, well, what's it like to treat eating disorders? And I say, I don't treat eating disorders. How about that? I treat people who struggle with eating disorders, and they develop eating disorders for reasons that are as varied and complex as they are and unique. Okay, orthorexia. Orthorexia is not a clinically diagnosable eating disorder, but it is a disordered eating condition that affects a lot of people. What is orthorexia if you haven't heard of it? In simple terms, it is a really unhealthy obsession with eating healthy, quote unquote, clean food. This is my pet peeve. What is clean food? Like, do we say I ate dirty? No, I ate clean. Okay. So the primary focus is to eat like super healthy, super healthy. And it also goes along with an obsession with the purity of food. That's where the clean part comes in. So while consciously, right, there's consciously and unconsciously, consciously, people with orthorexia are just trying to be healthy, there is usually an underlying conflict about anything messy in life, right? If you're eating clean, you don't have to worry about the messiness of life. And so sometimes people with orthorexia are unconsciously trying to clean up their lives and clean up their emotions by eating healthy. So these are the most common forms of disordered eating. And if you're struggling with something different or some combination of these, or you just want to know what's going on with you, drop me a comment. Let me know. I'll help you out. I mean, here's the bottom line. If your relationship with food is unhealthy and unhappy, if it is causing you unhappiness, if you don't feel good and you don't feel good about yourself because of how you are eating or what you are eating, then it's a problem. Whether we call it a clinically diagnosable eating disorder or not, if it's a problem for you, it's a problem that needs your attention. And by the way, food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem, whatever you're doing with it. The problem is what you want to really investigate. The problem is the hidden root that causes the weed, causes the behavior. So we are all unique, and our actions and behaviors with food, they depend on our mindset, our thought processes, our experiences, but our feelings, our opinions, our desires, our past, all of it influences our relationship with food. So you want to be really interested in that, not just focusing on what are you eating or not eating? All right, should you be worried about emotional eating? Is this a problem? Well, again, as I said before, if it's a problem for you, it's a problem. Emotional eating is pretty common. And if you turn to food rarely, once in a blue moon, like I said before, that's, dare I say it, normal. It's okay. But if it happens regularly or if it is a habit, it is a problem. If it causes you distress, it is a problem. If you blame yourself and you say, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? Then you should pay attention to that, definitely, as a warning sign. It needs your attention. Okay, so what to do? What to do about emotional eating? How do you resolve it? First, you got to identify why you're eating. Sometimes we go to food so fast, we don't even recognize that we are stressed, that we have been triggered. We think the trigger is food. Guess what? It's not. The trigger is something within you, some situation that's affecting you, something that's going on, something you can't be with, and that is causing you to head to the kitchen or grab your phone and order something off DoorDash. So first you identify what's going on. Then you express it. One thing I hear a lot is, oh, I guess I just have to sit in my feelings. I guess I have to learn to sit in my feelings. No. If you've listened to this show before, you know that I think that sounds terrible. And guess what? You can't sit your way through your feelings. You can't sit your feelings out. You can't stuff your feelings down. You can't drop them. You can't ignore them. You can't be grateful and have them go away. You can't positive think them away. The only way to get rid of feelings is to actually feel them. And that means start by expressing them, identifying them and expressing them. If you have my book, The Binge Cure, oh, look, I have it here. On page 45, I have a lot of prompts. And when you finish the prompts, right, I give you a guide to be able to express your feelings. Because sometimes we feel it, but we've been taught not to feel it, right? We live in a culture that says, don't have those feelings. You're strong if you don't feel your feelings and you drop them and ignore them, which is impossible. And you're weak if you feel them. So how do you learn to feel them? How do you learn to express them? Especially when there are also cultural prohibitions against expressing certain feelings. Oh, I don't want to be an angry person. Or I don't want to sound depressed. Or if I start getting anxious, I'm just going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. These are the things that a lot of people think. No, actually, you know, what you feel, you will heal. What you feel, you will heal. So first, identify what's going on. Secondly, express it. And by the way, when I say express it, I don't mean in an intellectual way. Like, it's one thing to say, yeah, I'm really sad. And it's another thing to say, yeah, I'm really sad. This is really hard. Right? One is an intellectual thought. The second is a thought plus the feeling. I'm sad because of this, or I'm angry because of this, or this is making me anxious. You get it out. And then the next step is to respond to yourself. And that's the most important part, because here's how we often respond to ourselves and each other. Oh, it's not so bad. It could have been worse. This is really a first world problem. I should be lucky I even have this problem. No. If it is a problem, it is a problem for you. It's affecting you. It needs your attention. So what you have to do first is validate and acknowledge, yes, this is upsetting. Of course it is. This is super upsetting. How could it not be? Pretty much anyone in my position would feel this way. Or if they aren't, wouldn't. I do, and that's all that matters. This is upsetting. Of course it is. This is making me feel mad, sad, afraid. course I feel this way. Validate and acknowledge. And then maybe you reassure yourself, hey, you know, I've gone through some tough things in the past. I'm going to get through this too. I'm going to think of a solution to this. I'm smart. I'm capable. I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to think about, like, how can I resolve the situation? Or if the situation cannot be resolved, how can I take care of myself right now? What do I need? No feeling lasts forever. In a certain amount of time, I'm not going to feel this to this intensity. This is just how I feel now. And then you feel actually better. I tell this story a lot because it's such a perfect depiction of how validating and acknowledging can help you, which is the story of, it has to do with physical pain, not emotional pain, but it absolutely applies to emotional pain, which is when my daughter came to me crying and said that she'd fallen down and skinned her knee and it really, really, really hurt. And she's crying, "Mommy, it hurts." And I did everything wrong. Everything wrong I did. I said, "Oh, that's not so bad. Ugh. It could have been worse." I swear I said it. "At least you only skinned one of your knees." I said it all. I said all the wrong things. And she's crying, "But Mom, it hurts. It hurts." And finally I realized, oh my gosh, I'm doing the thing. I'm doing the thing I tell everyone not to do. So I said, I validated her and said, "You know, actually, now that I look at it, that looks really painful. That looks like it really hurts." And she stopped crying. She's like, "Yeah, it does. Now can we put on a Band-Aid?" And she's fine. She just needed to be validated. We just need to be validated by others and by ourselves. So what you have to do, you identify it, you express it, and you validate and acknowledge what you're going through. And then you encourage yourself. So learning how to do that, of course, is not easy. It takes time. You got to unlearn all the ways that you think. And how does this relate to binge eating? Because when we respond to ourselves with validation, acknowledgement, kindness, understanding, when we get our feelings out, we don't need food to cope. We've just coped. This is a strategy for coping without food. When you cope and you soothe yourself with words, you don't need to eat over it. So, you know, food is not the problem. It is a solution to the problem. And the real problem lies deep within us. Often it is hidden from us in our unconscious minds. But the good news is that when you identify the emotions and conflicts that lead to the feeling, which lead to the behavior, because thoughts and beliefs lead to emotions, which lead to behavior. If you're only focusing on behavior, you're never going to get anywhere for long, and you're going to rely on willpower and control, and it's going to be terrible and miserable. But when you are understanding that thoughts and beliefs lead to feelings, lead to behavior, then you can change some of those thoughts and beliefs. You can also change the way you respond to yourself when you feel bad, because let's face it, you know, we don't live in a bubble. Things happen that make us feel bad. It's not just our thoughts and our interpretations of situations. Actual things happen and they make us feel terrible. And when we feel terrible, we need to have a way of coping that makes us feel better. We need to, you know, turn our inner critics into a friend. Because when we can respond to ourselves with kindness, with love, with generosity and support, you feel better. When you feel better, you don't need food to feel better. That's how it works. So identify the emotions that are leading to the unhealthy behavior, and cultivating healthier ways to respond to yourself, that helps you stop. And also looking at the thoughts and beliefs. Because if you have a thought and belief that says, I can never do anything right. There's something wrong with me. I'm a bad person. I'm a disaster. Something's wrong with me. How are you going to feel? You're going to feel terrible. Boom. Food takes you away from your own mean voice. So where did that voice come from? Where did you learn to talk to yourself in that way? Did someone else talk to you that way? Or is this an interpretation that you made long ago that's become an idea you have about yourself? What resonates with you? Okay, so I have some questions from listeners that I've been saving up. If you want to add any questions, any comments, you're on Instagram, please comment in the comment box. If you'd like to call into the show, the number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. I would love to talk with you. And if not, I will answer your questions. Okay. This is a very broad question, but I'm answering it today because our topic was all about what is emotional eating. This person says, why do I eat emotionally? Well, emotional eating is a way of coping with emotions or situations or the emotions that come from the situations. It's hard to be in conflict with your partner, to deal with an exhausting job, to process childhood traumas, to be lonely, to be upset, to feel suffocated, all the things that we might feel in our world, to not have a satisfied, life, to not feel our work is gratifying. Sheila is saying it never made sense that it was someone else's voice, but the possibility that I interpreted it, yes, that's an aha moment. Yes, kids, when they feel bad, they don't think, this situation is causing me a lot of problems, and I am feeling bad as a result of the situation that I am, in through no fault of my own. Kids are naturally egocentric. Right? It's like the old joke, son, we're getting divorced. The kid goes, what did I do? Right? Kids always blame themselves. If something goes wrong, it's their fault. If they feel bad, they think they are bad. And then that badness becomes a part of their story about themselves. And you don't even realize it's a story. It becomes your belief. I'm bad. There's something wrong with me. I'm bad. And then you could say, oh, look, this is the bad thing about me. I weigh too much. Oh, look, this is the bad thing about me. I binge eat or whatever it is. And then it's hard to stop those behaviors because then if you stop those behaviors, you still feel bad. That's why a lot of people have, they stop drinking and then their binge eating gets worse or they start gambling or they start doing all kinds of different things. You've got to get to the root issue of why you feel bad about yourself because you cannot hate yourself and into loving yourself. You cannot be mean to yourself and harsh to yourself and make yourself feel okay. You can't both put yourself down and lift yourself up at the same time. And if you're putting yourself down and you're feeling terrible about yourself and you're nasty to yourself, binging takes you away. It puts you in that zone where you're not feeling anything and you're not thinking anything. It gives you that time away from your own inner critic. And that's why getting rid of that critic, I like to say, a psychological exorcism is necessary. Getting rid of that critic, wherever it came from, whether it's someone else's voice, there's a lot of people, they were told, you're no good, you're too much, you're this, you're that, and then they believed it. Maybe they were told it overtly, maybe they were told it covertly. You're too emotional. You're too loud. Oh my God, everything bothers you. You're so sensitive. When people are told those things, they think there's something wrong with them. Then they believe them. So kids don't have the wherewithal to say, you know, I feel bad, but that's just because of my current circumstances and I don't have a way of dealing with it. No, what kid says that? Kids say, I feel bad. Oh, I must be bad. I must be bad. Or people are treating me badly. I must be bad. And that's the beginning of bad you, that you try to escape in different ways. Binging is one way. So let's challenge the idea that there's anything bad or wrong about you. By the way, one of the things I hear all the time is people, especially at the beginning of treatment, they say, I'm really sensitive. Just so you know, I'm really sensitive. Oh, how do you know you're really sensitive? Well, you know, my family's always telling me that I'm so sensitive because, you know, things really bother me. Oh, so you're human. You're human is what you are. And your family thinks that your human reaction is too much because maybe it upsets them. So they try to squash it down. So it's hard to have feelings. It's hard to be a human in this world sometimes. And eating gives you a soothing distraction. It gives you an escape, but it ultimately hurts you. That's why I call it a frenemy, right? It is a friend in that it does something for you. It helps you. It numbs you. It turns emotional pain to physical pain. It puts you in that binge zone where you're not thinking, you're not feeling. It gives you me time. It fills the void if you're lonely or unsatisfied. It symbolically fills the emptiness inside. It helps you escape. It does all the things. It helps you celebrate. It does so much. And by the way, it also represents people. But people can be unpredictable, unreliable, and unavailable. Food is predictable, reliable, and available. That's why we often turn to food instead of to people. But when you can comfort yourself, be kind to yourself, maybe connect with other people, maybe they're going to be safe, maybe not. Not everyone, you know, is so keen on connecting with a lot of people, or even some people. But the main thing is that when you can be there for you, when you could be a good, soothing, comforting presence for yourself, you will make peace with food. By making peace with yourself, you make peace with food. It's all about your relationship with yourself. Okay, another question. So shiver soap, does that make sense? And by the way, the aha moment, I'm actually glad that you wrote that. So many people, thank you, Oprah, think the aha moment is all you need. You just need the moment of insight. Aha! Wow! I get it. Amazing. And that everything will somehow then fall into place. Oh, how I wish that were true. That would be so cool. But it's not. We don't live in that world. We live in a world where you go, oh my gosh, aha, I get it. I see it. Huh. Okay. Now I know what to deal with. Now you see what it is that you need to process or change. An aha moment is insight. Insight is the beginning. How did I learn this way of responding to myself? How do I respond to other people? What are other ways I can be towards myself that are more nurturing and kind? That's, you know, that's where the work is. Look, here's the reality. It is work. It's not easy. It's a lot easier to focus on how many macros, you know, what your macros are, how many calories, carbs, fat grams, proteins, all the things. It is easier to focus on that than it is to heal yourself and to change your relationship with yourself. But the difference is when you're done with that work of healing yourself, healing the past, learning a new way of being in the present, changing your relationship with yourself, and therefore with food. You know, when you're done with that, you're done. You can go on counting calories, carbs, fat grams, and protein the rest of your life. You can white knuckle it the rest of your life. But when you really heal, when you get to that root or those roots, which are hidden underground, just like our hidden minds, we can't see a root, but we know it's there because it grows the weed. When you dig out the roots from your mind, you're done for good. Binging becomes a thing of the past. It's something you used to do. It's a thing you used to do to cope. But you don't do it anymore. You don't even think about it. Because now you're good to yourself. You're kind to yourself. You're supportive of yourself. You know how to nurture yourself. You know how to do all the things that you need to do to comfort and soothe yourself. And you don't have good foods or bad foods. You just, it's just, what am I going to eat? Because the other thing that leads to binging, this is not part of emotional eating, but it does lead to binging, deprivation. Deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation always leads to binging. That's why it's the diet binge cycle. If you tell yourself you cannot have something, you're going to want it. You're going to want it more. And then when you let yourself have it, you're going to say, oh my gosh, I had this. I blew it. The day is ruined. I might as well have this, 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 and this. And there's your binge. So the other necessary step is to stop dieting. To stop dieting and to just make foods all just equal value. And that is hard to do if you're not simultaneously doing the psychological work. But when you have good foods, bad foods, it becomes good me, bad me. If it's just, what do I want to eat? Do I want that? Do I want that? You can make healthy choices. I'm very proud of the fact that when my kids were little, I would offer them two choices. I would say, do you want an apple or do you want cookies? You know, do you want hummus and celery or do you want some ice cream? And you know what? A lot of times it would be the apple. It would be the hummus because they were tuned into their bodies. What do they want? What do their bodies want? Rather than, ooh, I can't have ice cream, so I better have it now. And if I start having it, I better have all of it because I'm not going to have it again until I lose X amount of weight. So let's take away the deprivation and just focus on what do you feel like eating so that it won't lead to a binge. But this is hard. It sounds good. It's hard to do because so many of us have diet mentality firmly ingrained in our minds. You've got to challenge that idea that if you will let yourself have something, you're not going to go absolutely crazy and eat it forever and blow up. Like, was it Veruca Salt who blew up like the blueberry in Willy Wonka? That's what it feels like. Oh my God, if I let myself have that, I'm going to start and never stop. No, if you let yourself have that, maybe you're going to, and really trust that, maybe you're going to just have a little bit. Or maybe you're going to decide if you want it or don't want it. Maybe you're going to have the apple and not the ice cream. Okay. Okay. Another question. How do I know if I'm emotionally hungry or physically hungry? Great question. So if you're unsure whether you're eating emotionally or not, here is something that you can try. So the next time you feel an urge to eat, try to postpone it. Not eat, binge. Like if you're like, oh, I'm being drawn to the kitchen, like the Millennium Falcon going to the Death Star. Ah! Yes, I am that Star Wars freaky fan. Everything goes back to Star Wars, right? But if you feel like you're being pulled to the kitchen and there's no resistance, resistance is futile. Give yourself 3 minutes or even 1 minute. Give yourself 3 minutes if you can. Tell yourself that you could still binge in 3 minutes. Yes, you could still binge in 3 minutes, but you're going to give yourself that 3 minutes before, just a little bit of a buffer. Now, if you get more physically hungry in that time, then you are probably physically hungry. But if you start having more feelings of anxiety and frustration and nervousness and sadness and loneliness or other emotions, then you're probably emotionally hungry. So the delay, that 3 minutes, pushes your underlying emotions to the surface as the intensity grows. Right, so then that would mean that's it's emotionally eating. Another way you could tell the difference is this. When we are physically hungry, we feel hunger physically in our bodies. Oh my gosh. A telemarketer in the middle of my show. What the heck? Okay. That's not supposed to happen. All right, I'm back. So when we are physically hungry, we feel hunger physically in our bodies. We have a gurgling stomach. We feel lightheaded. We feel, you know, that growling, like, physical feeling. We feel hunger physically, or we lose our words, or, you know, something like that. So if you're physically hungry, you're going to feel it in your body, and you're going to want to have just about anything. If it's available to eat, you're going to have it because you're hungry. You're physically hungry, and you're not going to be so picky. Yes, I'm starving. I don't like oranges, but I'm going to eat the orange because, yeah, I'm starving. I'll have it. Emotional hunger is not located in our bodies. It is located in our minds. So emotional hunger is when something sounds good or looks good, or you're going to feel better if you eat it, or you're going to, you know, it's comforting or it's soothing. So those are ways that you can differentiate between physical hunger, which is physical and grows in intensity if you give yourself that 3 minutes, or emotional hunger, which is emotional, it is mental, and it is like eating to change the way you emotionally feel, not the way you physically feel. Okay, I think I have time for a couple more questions. Let's see. I tend to binge during the holidays. Should I be worried about it? Okay, here's the thing. We often mistake binging for overeating. No, I think I have that backwards. We mistake overeating for binging because we all overeat on occasion. Like Thanksgiving is the classic overeater holiday. Like you're almost supposed to eat until you're too full on Thanksgiving. That's the message we get. That's overeating. And overeating simply means you ate too much. Either you were super hungry and you ate too much and didn't realize you were full, or it was just so good you just had some more. So overeating is just eating too much, and it is not basically like something that you feel terribly guilty about. It's just, okay, I overdid it. I'm going to eat a little less tomorrow. I'm going to go for an extra walk or whatever. But binging is a specific behavior that is compulsive. You can't stop. It is associated with shame, secrecy, and self-hatred. So overeating is, I overdid it. Okay. Binging is, oh my God, I hate myself. I can't believe I ate that. I'm horrified. I'm disgusted with myself, right? So it's important to differentiate between overeating and binging so you can take care of yourself the right way. You know, one way to stop overeating is to make sure that you eat enough during the day, because if you don't eat enough during the day, like my example in the beginning of the show, Lucinda barely ate anything during the day because she was so busy. And when she started eating at night, she couldn't stop because she was so physically hungry. So it turned into a binge, not from emotional reasons, but because of physiological reasons. All right. Okay. More questions. What's the first step we should take if we want to curb overeating? Clearly, I think this person means binging. For example, it's easier to change our environment than it is to change ourselves. What about a simple tweak, like changing the size of our plate? All right. Well, again, binging is different from overeating. But I think this person is talking about binging. So it's much easier to change the environment than it is to change ourselves. Yeah, but changing the environment won't change anything. You can have a smaller plate and it won't matter. You can fill that small plate 25 times or forget the plate. You're just going to grab things with your hands. It has nothing to do with what's logical. It has to do with what is psychological. What's logical is what makes sense. What's rational. Oh, if I want to lose weight, I should just not eat the whole cake. Okay, I won't. That would be logical. That's not how we work. That is not how we humans work, because it is not logical. It is psychological. Oh, I'm eating the cake because I am so lonely and I am so like, well, first it's, I have no control over cake, right? A lot of people are like, well, I have no control over cake. I have no willpower. I'm a food addict. My brain needs the dopamine, whatever the heck. No, cake is associated with filling a void. So you say, oh, I'm eating the cake because I am lonely or unfulfilled, or this cake is doing something for me, or it is the about deprivation. I can never eat cake, so therefore I can't stop eating it now. It doesn't have to do with logic. So the first step you really need to do is focus on why you're eating instead of what you are eating. Be curious. Like I said before, when we're curious and we ask ourselves questions, we are more likely to find answers. When you ask yourself the question of, huh, why can't I stop eating this cake? What's going on with me? Am I sad? Am I upset? Am I lonely? Use the food mood formula. If you don't have it, it's available in my the link in my bio. Use the food mood formula to learn what you're feeling and needing by what you're eating. Why? So changing the side of the plate is not going to change the motivation. The motivation is psychological. So that's what you need to attend to. What's going on with you? So in the cake example, oh, food mood formula, cake, filling, bulky, filling a void. Let's look at the holes in my life. Ask yourself, what are the holes in your life? What are the empty spaces? What is missing from your life? What do you need more of? And then once you identify that, now you can express what it's like not to have it. Oh, it's really hard to feel lonely. I desperately want to get married and have kids, maybe. But I can't find anyone who's right for me. That's lonely. So what's it like to feel lonely? Express the loneliness and then respond to yourself. It's hard to feel lonely. It's hard to want so desperately to be with someone and not be able to find your person. That is painful. That is upsetting. That's crushing. And it's really hard to see all the people around you who do have the thing that you want. You know, it's really hard, especially as we head towards the holidays. It's super hard. Here you are feeling alone, and all you start seeing are happy families and mistletoe and people kissing and having a fabulous, wonderful time and Hallmark holiday movies and commercials. Ugh, so hard. Yes, it's hard. Validate it. Of course it's hard. It's hard to not have what you want. It's painful. And I'm doing everything I can to find that person for me. And I'm going to take my own side as I do it. I'm not going to say there's something wrong with me. I'm going to say that person is out there and I'm going to find them. And this is temporary. And one day I'm going to feel better about this. Right now it feels terrible. What do I need to feel better that's not food? That's what you do instead of eating cake. That's why the size of your plate is absolutely irrelevant. Because we all know you can have a teeny tiny plate this big and, you know, have a teeny tiny slice of cake and put it on there and then have another teeny tiny slice of cake and so on and so on and so on. Okay, so it's not what you're eating that is the problem. It is what is eating at you. If you take one thing from this show today, let it be that, along with the idea that there is hope, because there sure is. So thank you so much for joining me today. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen later on LA Talk Radio or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you would like to get my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, it is available on Amazon in paperback, hardcover, Kindle, and audiobook. And I read it to you, so you might like that one. Take good care of yourself. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.